So these are the challenges that we kind of address holistically at Uber, provided huge success at Uber. And we thought at that time, is it very unique to Uber? Because the scale is different for Uber.
Mm-hmm.
We spoke to a bunch of our industry friends and they said, hey, if a platform this exists, we want to use it because these are the similar kind of problems at different scales that we face, but the problems are the same. So that's what got motivated us to start Open Metadata and Collate. And true to our kind of fundamental kind of interest into open source, our contribution to open source.
This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Armon Shrocki. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm here with Harsha, a guest from Silicon Valley, San Carlos, to be more exact. And we had just a nice chat, and I think we will have a fantastic discussion today, and you will enjoy it. Harsha, welcome to this podcast. If you could please introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about the company that you are involved in right now.
Thanks a lot, Armon. Great to be here. I'm Harsha, co-founder and CTO of Collate. Collate is the company building open metadata and metadata platform that unifies discovery, data quality, observability, and governance of data in one single platform in open source. So to tell the story, my particular background has been in the distributed systems, big data, started Yahoo, mainly focused on vertical search engines. We were at some point a better relevancy than Google that lasted for a short time before Google, you know, essentially stole our lunch at that time, I guess. From there, I get to kind of experience the big data as it is happening, as it is getting built at Yahoo. My co-founder, Suresh Srinivas, is a core engineer behind Hadoop, building that from out of MapReduce paper that came out of Google at that time. And we are the first kind of consumers of Hadoop back in Yahoo to scale, you know, to index a large amount of data at scale as soon as we're getting the product, listings coming up from various different merchants across the board and putting into product search of Yahoo search back in the day. That got me interested into data in itself since I kind of first experienced the big data. And then I got an opportunity to go to Mozilla where I led the data platform team itself to build analytics, business analytics, as well as community analytics. Like, there are many contributors to the Mozilla process. Like, if they actually shipped a fix, did it improve performance? Did it cause any bugs? And then again, from a marketing and business side of the things, how the Mozilla installations are doing is really important for the foundation, Mozilla Foundation itself. So I had an opportunity to kind of lead from the ground up. Again, it's early days of big data in any company. And you know, Hadoop is just really young at the time and productionizing that and making that available for all of our community as well as internally. As I was kind of building this, got interested in contributing to open source projects like Apache Kafka, Apache Storm, went and joined Hortonworks, which is the company again came out of Yahoo, where I met my co-founder Suresh, worked with him for a long time since then. In fact, became a committer and PMC in many of these projects. Lately, I mean, the last thing that we have done is at Uber. I spent quite a bit of years there scaling the Kafka infrastructure. Everything at Uber flows through Kafka. If you request for any driver, if you ask for Uber Eats, everything flows through Kafka. And Kafka is used very interestingly at Uber in a lot more interesting ways than my experience before. It provided a lot of unique challenges to scale that. I think at one point we are doing, I think it probably increased to 5 trillion events per day. I think beyond LinkedIn, we are the biggest installation and still probably right now of Apache Kafka. And Suresh also was at Uber leading the entire data infrastructure there. I think one of the core principles that we kind of went to Uber is we saw a lot of data infrastructure problems at Hortonworks. Like, how do you scale? How do you process petabytes of data? But, you know, the companies are moving to cloud and the infrastructure itself, the maintenance, the deployment is becoming like not a big deal because, you know, cloud will solve for it. And what are the issues that organizations are facing when the infra itself is, you're not fighting the infra itself. So with that, we went to Uber because everything in Uber is data related, right? Everyone is working on data. Every decision is made on data. So with that, like, hey, this is a great opportunity for us to learn more. But when we got there, the data problems are like every day or every other day. And when they fail big time. Case an example is when we, in one of the earnings call, we underreported number of trips taken because a person who's looking at the trips table, there are 100 different trips tables similarly named. They could not find the right table containing the latest data. So they took the random data and they report the numbers. That's a big problem. We accidentally copied GDPR data because the person who is working in US accidentally copied from S3 of, you know, Europe zone to US. Number of other product, anything that we are actually putting into the data, if the data quality is not good, the ML models, the marketing campaigns that we are running is not resulting in the right quality. So for us, the target was how do we actually make sense of all of these things? And there are many other kind of various aspects to the data, like definitions of location. If you think of Uber, location is such a fundamental concept. You would think from outside in, everybody should know what location means. It's simple, but depends on who you ask in the company. Someone says latitude, longitude. Someone says it's an address. Someone says it's a rider's address. So it's a different definition. Nobody's actually understanding the data itself. So these are the challenges that we faced that kind of fundamentally challenged us to think from first principles perspective. How do we actually look at the data, right? Mm-hmm. So we said, like, hey, maybe it should be start with metadata. Like what tables we have, what columns we have, what concepts are we talking about? Do we have a good data quality? Do we have a lineage where this data is to be getting derived? And more importantly, does the data that we are looking at, is it fresh? Is it complete? Because it goes through various different channels. So these are the challenges that we kind of address holistically at Uber, provided huge success at Uber. And we thought at that time, is it very unique to Uber? Because the scale is different for Uber. Mm-hmm. We spoke to a bunch of our industry friends and they said, hey, if a platform this exists, we want to use it because these are the similar kind of problems at different scales that we face, but the problems are the same. So that's what got motivated us to start Open Metadata and Collate. And true to our kind of fundamental kind of interest into open source, our contribution to open source, we wanted to do this in open source. And, you know, this is like a third iteration of metadata platform that we are building. We started Apache Atlas, Uber's Databook, Open Metadata is our third iteration. And we wanted to kind of do it in a unique approach that hasn't solved in the industry yet.
Very impressive background, Harsha. I mean, all of these projects that you have been involved in. When did you guys start this company? When, which year?
2021, September.
Yeah. Okay. So it is very much at the time that, you know, Gen AI came to market. So you guys kind of, you know, has been, you know, you have been very involved in this kind of AI discussions during all of this time. And I bet as a data person who has been involved in data for so long, when everyone talks about these LLMs and AI and all of these, probably in your mind, it just comes like the metadata and data and the infrastructure that needs to be there. Otherwise, what do you want to get out of this kind of system? How do you see, you know, the importance of this metadata being in place and the importance of data structure before companies really go and seriously think and invest in LLM?
Yeah. Oh, great question. So I think I'll give you some interesting perspective from our side. When we started in, we're actually thinking about this for a long time. 2020 is when we are actually sitting there, you know, what we want to do next, what is the thing that we can do, improve the data of the organizations, right? You know, and we have done all of this metadata at Uber. We are kind of, you know, tossing as ideas. What is the next thing that we can do to improve? And one of the key things that we keep coming back here is automations, right? We want to automate because most of the time the data teams are sitting there and automating some sort of either ETL or a process from a governance point of view. An example we always quote is when GDPR mandate came in, there are 200 engineers at Uber sitting there manually tagging the data. that shouldn't be a 200 engineer's job. For 3 months, we are kind of stopped still. You know, we need to kind of get to the GDPR compatibility across the data. And it shouldn't be a manual effort. It should be automated. And the key to that is the metadata. Metadata is capturing the tables. Metadata is capturing the columns. Metadata is capturing the classification of the data that you have stored in either structured or unstructured data. So we are thinking of that, hey, you know, maybe we should, metadata is another problem that we want to solve, but metadata is key to actually build automations. In fact, in our pitch slides, that's what we have essentially did is we want to build data for the people and data for the machines as well, right? And interestingly enough, the LLMs are still an experimental, you know, there's a, you know, we heard all the stories of OpenAI sitting there building it. It's not, you know, available to the public yet. It's still someone's dream at that point, right? So we haven't actually crossed paths, but interestingly enough, our thought process was to always to do automations. And now the automations are through your natural language LLMs taking care of it. And all the foundation things that we have built, one of the things we didn't directly jump into automations is we looked around, is there any metadata platform that is actually structuring the metadata properly so that it's not just for like people to understand the metadata, but also machine to understand. So we didn't find anything else, right? So that's one of the reasons we sat down, created the Open Metadata as an open source project with the JSON schemas as a standards. So if you go to our Open Metadata, there are like 700 schemas that we built, hand-built, to model the metadata that flows across the organizations, all the way from your users, teams, to tables, columns, reports, ML models, including files and directories in unstructured data. So the benefit of that is now you have a really structured metadata that an LLM can actually look at the specification, understand how these things are relate to each other, how they are stored, and how what automation that you can build on top of it.
Yeah, even forgetting about LLMs, the whole promise of metadata, even before, you know, AI be part of the equation, was that when you have the right metadata, you get smarter about your data. You can compare your data in a more intelligent way, because otherwise the comparison always is very challenging, because you end up comparing apples to oranges unless you have the right metadata that tells you really if this is compatible, this attribute is really the same meaning, has the same meaning that the other attribute, even if most of them are named the same, they're just naming it doesn't make it, right? So it has to be defined. Now, go ahead. So I have another question, but I want you to comment on it before I really pose my question.
Yeah, so metadata for us is the key of defining how do you enforce the data governance. So why is data governance is important in the world of LLMs and AI, right? So data is actually organically grown for good. I think, you know, we can argue for the better of the teams and the organizations. You build all of the self-service tools. That is, you get to kind of go to this data mart, figure out what data you have. And I, as a data scientist, I need a dashboard to create. I need like a 3 tables, different columns information. And what my instinct is to create another table, another view on top of this. So I'm creating a separate data set that is very unique for this project to succeed. Then you have ML models who people are creating and training the data. They're going to take a bunch of this data and create another tables to train that. So essentially, the data itself is either copied or organically grown over a period of time. And that's to the benefit of the teams, because you cannot just have one piece of data and say that, hey, you should use this way for everything that you can ask. Mm-hmm. But the outcome of that is now you have a growth of the data itself, where the core data is same, but it's kind of replicated so many times. Now, how do you enforce the governance? Now, on top of that, with the text-to-SQL and LLMs coming into the play, how do you tell the LLMs if a user coming in and asking for what is our revenue, right? How do you kind of translate that into a SQL and say that, hey, the table is actually in Snowflake, or the table is in Databricks, or the table is in Redshift, but there are many revenue tables, but this is the right table that to use, right? So our goal is to how do you kind of derive the insights and how do you actually make sure the data behind it is actually properly structured and governed. To us, if you do not actually focus on the metadata and put the governance planes and understand the classification of the data properly, you won't be able to kind of go speed run with LLMs and AI. So essentially, it's like, you know, it's like a human problem too, right? At least with humans, there is certain things that I understood. I can tell Arman, hey, you know, when you're looking for revenue, here are the few tables you need to look for. That becomes your knowledge and you get to go into it. With LLMs, there are hundreds of users asking different questions. How does it find the right data? I think the key to that is to how do you govern the data is based on your metadata. So that's what we're coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So talking about some, actually many years ago when I was in 20s, maybe over 30 years ago, there was a project I was working on. And that was the early years I was, you know, probably one of my first projects in the U.S. And then I was thinking at the time that probably in 10, 20 years, there will be metadata for everything, especially internet, you know, coming to market at that point. And yeah. I thought that people need now to use this data. It hasn't happened, right? So there were many companies coming and standardizing and defining the metadata in a universal way.
Yeah.
But it didn't, was not like, you know, everything now has a standard universal kind of metadata and definition and everything. But when you look at different industries, which industries are ahead of others from your perspective when it comes to metadata, either from the aspect of maturity of having those metadata or at least from the perspective of asking for those kind of a structure?
Yeah, I think you probably kind of alluding to semantic web, where, you know, everyone wants to do kind of understood, the universally understood, what is a person, what is an email, what is an address, and essentially you then create a linked objects within the internet, so that if I go to yahoo.com and set email, that meaning is universally stored, the semantics of that is universally understood, the email is defined consistently, like the web. That was a great idea, but the problem with that is the practicality of it, right? You can define that standard, but everybody else need to kind of implement that standard. So that is the challenge of semantic web faced. Now it trickled down into two different aspects of it. For a long time, people try to build knowledge graphs and ontologies in organizations. To an extent, they are successful. To answer, I think the good examples would be healthcare industry, probably kind of ahead of that, right? So they need a clear taxonomy, clear semantics to understand how the pipelines of healthcare works. So they are actually doing, better than most of the others, from my knowledge. And coming to like, you know, that's a growth of it. The challenges that I see from, even from organization is when they try to do kind of ontologies and knowledge graph at the row level, which is your customer tables have hundreds of thousands of rows. Each row has contains an object of information of a customer details, first name, last name, address, and so on. And they want trying to say, instead of defining at the metadata level, they're trying to do so far, John as a person is also a customer, but also a supplier to this particular company, right? So those are the relations that they need to strongly type so that they can define a business process when John orders something or John sends something. That is where I think the challenge has been for organizations to adopt knowledge graph and semantic web to an extent is to go through all of these records and able to kind of put a meaning to it. Where we are coming from is that is a challenge. Why don't we actually apply this meaning and semantics at the metadata level? By that, when we see a customer's table, we can define a concept and definition of what that customer means for that organization. And when we see a join with customers to orders, we bring in another definitions of it, how they are actually related to it, what data is actually defining those two things. So instead of kind of going at the each order level, each object level, we are kind of superimposing at the top level saying that, hey, customers and orders are modeled this way. Customer is this as a definition, order as this as a definition. Then you can actually calculate revenue as another definition by joining customers and orders table, saying that in last quarter, this is the orders that we made. This is the revenue that we were able to sell based on the orders total, right? So in kind of classified or semantically linked data, you wouldn't know which table contains customer view, which table contains orders.
Mm-hmm.
Unless someone goes and, you know, properly names those tables the way, but in reality, that's not how it goes, right? In reality, when people are looking at the data teams, they have tables with 2,000 columns, 4,000 columns. You have one, you know, fact table with all of these things. So that's when the metadata becomes a lot more easier to manage semantically, easier to manage to link, easier to manage, build the definitions versus what used to happen with, you know, all the way from semantic web to knowledge graph in the organizations.
Yeah, I'm not sure if there would be a day that these AI agents are working with each other and then some of them telling each other that humans fail terribly to really define this metadata and organize data very well. Let's just do it. And then they decide overnight to really go there and just put the right structure and metadata and everything.
That is a good job. I think the argument that we face is like at the end of the day, LLMs are probabilistic models. Right. Mm-hmm. So the context, we are all talking about context. Context means essentially a better recall of you and I having conversations. We are talking about semantics, we're talking about metadata. We are actually storing, I can identify my talk with Arman as, hey, I spoke to Arman at length for about metadata. 6 months down the line, we, you know, meet, we can recall about what we talked about. We are kind of going there with LLMs, with the context recalls and storing, hey, here is, you know, prompt with additional things that we discussed before. But it can't tell the intent of what the talk is about, why we are doing it. That's, we are talking about semantics at that point. The meaning to this conversation, why we are here, right? We are here to, hey, you know, we have a conversation so that the listeners of this podcast can understand from our perspective what we are doing from a metadata. If you apply that to any, you know, data or any work that is happening in organizations, right, you know, you can go and say that, hey, Harsha, create me a dashboard. That's a context of it, but what exactly the meaning? Oh, we need to create a dashboard for revenue so that we can better track our, you know, the revenue that company is making, our department is making, and so on. So that gets lost, and I don't think you can teach the LLMs easily until unless the engineers, the ARC, the experts sit together, you know, put together a semantic map of that.
Yeah. And since our discussions are getting very geeky, I'm going to ask you a random question as well. So my random question for you would be, out of all of the cities that you have been in, which city did you like most to recommend and say, Arman, you should really go and visit this city. I really liked it. Just spend 2 weeks there and you will enjoy it.
I'll go with, I think, Bangkok. We went to recently, so that's my... I can't recommend San Francisco because you've been here. So I'll recommend... I hope you haven't visited Bangkok yet. But, you know, one of the cool things with Colette is we're all remotely. We born in the middle of COVID. So it became our kind of... the only way we could actually start at that time. And it became our, you know, factor because we found amazing people across the world. And we make an effort at least once, or at least... one to two years to meet in person. So we recently, we had a good outing with our team across the world in Bangkok. It was like good memories. So I would recommend that. It was a great experience.
Yeah, no, I haven't been there, but I have heard great things about it. Definitely one of the cities I would love to go. Thanks for the recommendation. Now, going back to kind of the data discussion, if you wanted to really start the company that you guys started in 21, start it now in 26, how would you change it, if anything you would change? Or you would do it differently, or you would do it the same? How would you look at it based on what you have learned, you know, going through that process and doing everything you did and AI and all the things happening between?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how much time we have, I can go at length at this. Yes. But it's been a great experience, and I felt like it's so many teachable moments for us, so many learning moments. I keep taking notes. At some point, I'll publish a blog or something. But for my own learning, right? So I think one of the things that we do keep intact is we both, Suresh and myself, are both. We want to build a company efficiently. This is before it was fashionable back in 21. because right now, everybody talks about the Cloud Code and Codex and other, you know, tools that you can build a business by individuals or few individuals, right? And that's been the case in the last 2 years. Many companies are coming out with great revenues. But we are, from a very day one, we wanted to kind of build an efficient way so that you know, not only we can sustain, we can grow the company more responsibly. That, you know, we would love to keep it that way, right? The second thing is open source. I believe we've been the benefactors of open source, either through contributions or through career growth, or just the visibility of the projects. I think when you have a good idea, when you open source it, there will be an amazing talent that can attract it. A lot of our engineers came from through that. They contributed initially by just their own interest. We found that through that, and it has grown organically. So those are the things I think very near and dear to me. I would love to keep that same way if I'm doing it again. Mm-hmm. What I would like to change is the learnings that we have done, right? So we built the project from ground up. So it did take time to kind of get to the market. Another things I would like to keep it that way is we spent quite a bit of initial time as a founder sales, right? Mm-hmm. Founder-led sales. We went to the market. We spoke to the customers. We did end-to-end, all the way from selling to MSA signing, getting onboarding the customers. Great experience. But you understand as a founder kind of fundamentally how the business works, how the selling works, what is your kind of persona that you're selling to. What worked, what didn't work, because there will be many failures in the process. You won't be selling as good as a seasoned sales team would sell. But I think where I would change certainly is maybe hiring a sales team a little more earlier. I think we had a lot of legs there. But, you know, we are doing such a good job of selling it. I would like, you know, maybe hire a kind of founding sales team earlier to get to the market. So that would probably change. Marketing as well. For a long time, we spent with zero marketing. I think to an extent, we just started marketing like last November or something like that, officially, mm-hmm. when we hired our chief marketing officer. Before that, it is naturally grown, which is great. I think it speaks to the volumes of open source movement, right? Mm-hmm. But then you, as a founder, you get to greedy of, hey, what would have been if we actually get the in the word out mm-hmm. to a lot more people? What is the growth that actually looks like? You always want to optimize it. So sure. I wouldn't say like, you know, it's a bad move, but I would say it's probably a move I would switch and see how mm-hmm. what the outcome will be, right? So those are my learnings. I think most of it is stick to the way we build the team efficiently and organically. But there are things that you can, once you have the product and you see the market fit, you can accelerate much faster when you have a more seasoned, you know, sales team or a marketing team. Oh.
No, very useful. Thanks for sharing that. Yes. My last question for you is about a book that either you personally liked it or you used it professionally and it was impactful. And you may, you know, tell us about, you know, a blog that you liked, whatever, whichever is. What you would like to share with the audience?
Yeah, definitely. I think I would recommend Designing Data Intensive Applications by Martin Kleppmann. I think mm-hmm. I believe Martin was working just about when Kafka came out back in LinkedIn days. So a lot of, especially if you're an engineer or building anything substantial with the distributed systems and everything else, it's a great kind of insights into how do you kind of model your entire data infrastructure. How do you model a good distributed systems? What are the fundamentals of it? I hope, you know, as a programmers, we don't lose that, the ability to model, ability to design. In the world of AI generated code, we are all generating a lot of lines, but at the end of the day, I feel like if you actually model, I think most of the time, a lot of arguments right now is programming is out of kind of fashion. To me, programming always has been about your thinking, the ability to model the requirements into actually a sustainable, a scalable system. So I feel like this book offers that abundantly. Like, you know, you get to know how to design, and having that core, irrespective of who is writing the code and how we are writing the code, doesn't matter. The core functionality of an engineer or a programmer is always about, here is the problem that I want to solve. How do we solve it? How do we solve it effectively? And how do we solve it effectively in the sense that it can be extending as the things change, and things always change.
Fantastic. It was great having you here. I'm so glad you had the time to join us. It was my pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, no, great. Thanks for having me, Tamar. And it's great to chat with you as well.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.